Hello and a warm welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. The IAEA Board of Governors has held an emergency meeting on U.S. request to look into what Washington calls Iran's violation of the nuclear deal. Now, in the meeting, the U.S. accused Iran of extortion and said that the country has no credible reason not to stick to its commitments as per the multilateral agreement. It also asked Iran to reverse the process of scaling down on its commitments within the JCPOA. Now, Iran's envoy said that there was no statement issued in the session in favor of the U.S. and that it achieved nothing from that meeting. Let's begin tonight's program with our correspondent in Vienna, Homa Lesgi, who followed all those developments in that IAEA meeting. Homa, over to you.
Yes, what the Iranian ambassador basically said was that there was no formal outcome or conclusion or resolution to the meeting, what the U.S. wanted. And he said this is because the majority of the delegations present at this special board meeting were deploring, in his words, the unilateralism of the American side, the unilateral withdrawal and reimposition of sanctions, and that he was saying that this is the reason why they did not even agree to convene this meeting, to call for convening this meeting. He said that Iran had been informed that the U.S. Delegation actually approached various delegates before it made this request to have them on board, but none of them had agreed to make this request, so the U.S. made it itself. What Iran called was a sad irony that the U.S., which is violating the deal by withdrawing, is now concerned about implementation of the JCPOA. Another issue that was mentioned by Ambassador Ghali Bobadi concerned the financial mechanism that has been introduced by the Europeans in STEX. Of course, we know that Iran has said it will continue with these decisions to reduce its commitments in different phases unless the Europeans meet those expectations. He was a bit more vocal about what these expectations are. He said that when it comes to INSTEX, Iran would only accept it if it covers all countries, not just the current 10 within the European Union, if it includes all items under sanctions, not just foodstuffs and medicine, and also if it is properly and sufficiently funded. And also another important aspect for Iran is the fact that Iran should be able to export oil and should be able to benefit from its oil exports. This pressure, we also said, or what the U.S. calls maximum pressure policy, cannot be undertaken, but at the same time, the U.S. is calling for negotiations. So I'll just quickly add, in his words, in Mr. Ghali Bobadi's words, you can't ask somebody to negotiate with you when you're pointing a gun at his chest.
Exactly. Thank you for that, Homa Lesgi, our correspondent in Vienna. Now let's begin the program with some comments by Richard Millett, a journalist and political commentator joining us from London. Good to have you with us, Richard. Iran's IAEA envoy has announced in that presser that Washington achieved nothing out of the emergency meeting of the Board of Governors. He also said that it was a ridiculous request in the first place, and that there was no official conclusion for Washington. Let's have your assessment of the meeting.
Well, I don't think there's ever going to be any agreement from the Iranian side. I think whatever meeting takes place with the IAEA, there's only going to have to be eventually some sort of negotiations opening up of Iran. And Trump has said, come and talk directly to America. Trump's going out talking to North Korea, talking to China, talking to Russia. People don't necessarily agree with it, but I think, you know, Iran eventually, if it's got its people's interests at heart, Iran, the Iranian government, is going to have to speak to America, because as we've seen, you know, whatever the EU does, UK, Germany, France, America seems to be the one that holds the cards. And if Trump says we're going to put sanctions back in place, which is happening to Iran, which is causing problems for the Iranian economy, then I don't see how really, you know, the Iranian government can hold out without speaking to Trump, speaking to the White House, and the UK, EU, Germany, France are going to have to follow as well. They can't really get away from the fact that they're going to have to do what Trump wishes. The most powerful country in the world, most powerful man in the world. And there just seems to be a stalemate at the moment, Behrouz. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to get together at some stage. And I don't think the IAEA, And I don't think the past negotiations that we saw in 2015 that led to the agreement that is at the centre of your discussion, at the centre of this debate, Americans are satisfied. They jumped into it too quickly. They basically gave the Iranian government $100 billion. And if that had gone on to the Iranian people, if that was invested in the Iranian economy, I think we'd have all been a lot happier. But that money was given out, delegated, handed over to Hezbollah, to Islamist groups in Gaza, in to the Yemeni opposition groups, to aid the problems with Assad, to aid Assad in Syria, and combined with the possibility at the end of the agreement, there could be an Iranian nuclear bomb, even though, however long this agreement takes,
okay,
next agreement is expired.
Iranian nuclear bomb. Okay, let's go to George Zamueli. George, I don't know what Richard is talking about. Do you make sense of it? Because Iranian nuclear bomb?
I don't know myself. Okay. To remember that the CIA found more than a decade ago that Iran had no nuclear weapons program. That's the CIA. That's not some European lefty. It's not the Iran's name. The CIA said there is no nuclear weapons program in Iran. The Iranians voluntarily cut back on their uranium enrichment, something that they are perfectly entitled and legally entitled to do under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They did it with a view to the lifting of all sanctions. And what has happened is that the United States has walked away from the agreement, tightened the sanctions. The Europeans haven't really stepped up to the plate and in any way alleviated the sanctions. Mm-hmm. And now the United States is waxing indignant that Iran is somehow violating the JCPOA.
Exactly.
But Iran, according to the terms, let me just finish this, according to the terms of the JCPOA, once the United States had restored the sanctions, Iran no longer any obligations to continue to implement the JCPOA. It's actually there. It's in black and white.
Exactly.
Iran
exactly. We'll
has
come
no
to that.
Longer any obligations to implement the JCPOA once the United States reimposes the sanctions.
Right on. We'll come to that, George, at a later point. Now, Richard, I got a question for you. The U.S. State in this meeting called on Iran to reverse course and citing the country's reduction of commitments within the nuclear deal. But that was what I was referring to. Now, the deal has given to Iran, as just George mentioned, the right to reduce its commitments as soon as the other parties to the deal stop adhering to the deal. And that's what exactly has happened. Now, isn't it better for the U.S. to ask the European signatories to fulfill their pledges so Iran would reverse course? And Iran has announced this is reversible.
Absolutely, Beirut, this is all reversible, but it is not meeting what the Americans want. It's irrelevant, this agreement. The agreement from 2015 is absolutely irrelevant to the extent, as I said previously,
Americans signed it.
I agree with you that Iran, you know, America has breached its agreement. Iran now has a right to do what it wants because that agreement has fallen apart. If
America
Iran wants to do that, that's a completely different issue. If Iran wants to take the risk of nuclear capacity above the levels that were agreed, then no one can say that that 2015 agreement doesn't, no one can say that that agreement applies. Absolutely, it doesn't apply. But then we'll be back into the pre-2015 position.
No. The agreement applies. Don't make a mistake, Richard. It's based on Articles 26 and 36 of the JCPOA. That's the Iran nuclear deal. This is what exactly Iran is doing, based on the provisions of the agreement.
I agree. But the problem is, Iran is still going to potentially see break out the capacity to 90% uranium enrichment, which is beyond what it requires for a nuclear power station, which can only mean one thing, Behrouz, a nuclear bomb. And Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other countries in that region, in the Middle East, are not, you know, we can discuss the agreement however long we like into the night, Behrouz.
Okay.
But none of the countries in the Middle East are going to be happy seeing Iran break out to 90% uranium enrichment. And if that happens,
Iran never announced it will do that. Anyway, now let me ask George. Washington once again called for negotiations with Iran without any preconditions. This is what they raised again in this meeting. Now, Iran says it's foolish to hold a gun on one's head and then ask for talks. Let's have your comments on that.
No, that's absolutely right. Now, Trump may well have thought that if he applies this policy of maximum pressure on Iran, Iran is going to come back on bended knee and come to some sort of, make some kind of concessions that Trump can then tout as a great victory for his tough-minded policy. Now, this sort of thing may work in the business and real estate world in which Trump operates. It doesn't work with when you're dealing with nations, because nations don't like one thing. They don't like to be made to look stupid. And I think the Iranians feel that they've been made to look stupid. They gave up uranium enrichment in the hope of the lifting of sanctions, and it didn't happen. And so now they say, well, we gave it all up in return for nothing. So now that the Trump is saying, okay, we're gonna have negotiations, why should Iran believe that if it makes some further concessions, or maybe it can make some concessions down the road, why should it believe that the next man or woman in isn't going to say, well, you know, I don't really like this agreement either. I think Iran should make
exactly,
more concessions.
Exactly.
Let, this deal as well.
Very good question. Let's see if Richard has an answer to that.
Well, Beirut people negotiate agreements and renegotiate agreements all the time. It's just a case of whether both sides agree
What's
or not.
What's the use of that agreement? Agreement for the sake of agreement?
The last agreement was void.
Just talk the talk? You could also walk the walk.
Beirut, the last agreement wasn't effective. As I said, what happened at the end of that agreement, Beirut?
The U.S. ruined it.
The end of the agreement, the agreement that we're discussing, it basically says now, in I don't know how long it was even, 15 years. So let's say 15 years, Beirut. In 15 years, once that agreement expires, then Iran can legally reach, well, it can do what it wants and reach out and get to a nuclear bomb. So who's going to stop Iran?
Iran will never do that, Richard. Islam does not allow that. And Iran's leader has asserted. He has issued an edict. It's called fatwa in Arabic. It bans Muslims from producing any atomic weapons. Iran can never do that. Canonically, it's banned. Now let's go to George. Iranian envoy told this meeting that the reduction of commitments in the nuclear deal is the result of the U.S. pressure and also exiting the deal. And that is also echoed by Russia and China. The other day they also talked about this. Do you share the same opinion?
Yes, I think Iran's position is perfectly reasonable, as you know, the Russians pointed out. Iran has complied in every aspect of the agreement, letter and spirit. This has been vouchsafed by the IAEA, and even U.S. government officials, Rex Tillerson, the National Security Advisor before Bolton, his name escapes me, all said that Iran is complying with the JCPOA. So, as far as Iran is concerned, what else is it supposed to do? I mean, if it's done everything that the agreement has been stipulated, and the Americans are just simply walking away from it, and they can't sell their oil, which means that it's causing economic hardship on their people, what else are they supposed to do? Just simply to cave in and surrender to the hysterical, crazies who are running the Trump administration foreign policy. It's, you know, that's absolutely unreasonable. And so Iran is step by step removing its obligations under the JCPOA. I mean, it's doing it very cautiously, not doing anything rash. I mean, it's been quite a long time. It's, they're giving the Americans plenty of opportunities to return to the agreement, or at least to end the extraterritoriality of the sanctions. In other words, you know, so maybe cooler heads would prevail. They're very reasonable, but you can't expect it to go on being so reasonable.
Now, Richard, the United States says that Iran has no good reason not to adhere to the deal. This is what exactly the EOC statement said in this meeting. Now, Iran has fully complied with the deal. This is approved by the UN oversight body, IAEA, for 15 times. It also waited since 2015 for the other side to make good on their end of the bargain, which has not happened so far. Iran also waited for 1 year after the U.S. withdrew from the deal and then decided to reduce its commitments as per the deal's provisions. Are these no good reasons?
Well, America's not happy. We can discuss this into the night. If Trump isn't happy and America isn't happy, the White House isn't happy, then...
then nobody must be happy.
There's got to be some sort of discussion between... I understand what your guest says, that Iran feels that it's been hard done by. I think the world can see that Iran does feel that the Iranian side sees that it's been hard done by, but the American side sees that the agreement that was signed was also not an effective agreement. So both sides feel that hard done by. Everyone can have an argument about this. At the end of the day, the realism of the case is, what is going to be done? Is Iran going to proceed to nuclear, increase it above their thresholds? If it does, then it's going to be a problem from America, from the Saudis, from Israel. There's going to be eventually the EU and the UK and the French and the Germans are going to have to join in because of peer pressure. And it's not just about the nuclear the potential nuclear side of it. $100 billion was given to the Iranian government, and that has not been spent on the Iranian economy. That has not been spent on the Iranian people. That has been spent on terrorist outfits in the Middle East, including Hezbollah in Lebanon.
Hezbollah is fighting terrorists. Hezbollah is fighting Daesh.
And Hamas and Islamic Jihad and other Islamist terrorist groups in Gaza. So it's not just about the nuclear side. It's about how that $100 billion of sanctions relief in 2015 is being spent. And once the Iranians start selling their oil, how is that going to be spent? That's not being spent on the Iranian people. It's being spent on terrorist outfits throughout the Middle East, baby.
Okay, let's have George's comment on that.
Well, I agree with what you just said. I mean, if you remember during the 2016 election, Donald Trump said that the arch foes in the Middle East were Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Mm. And on ISIS and how we've got to destroy ISIS. Well, who has done the most to fight Al-Qaeda and ISIS in the
Iran.
Middle East? Iran and Hezbollah, and together with Assad. And those, the three of them have done the most of the heavy lifting. And now they're the ones who are deemed terrorists by the Trump administration. But as far as what happens now, the maximum pressure policy that the Trump administration has applied against Iran is likely to backfire, and there could well be a maximum pressure now on the United States, because if there is likely, there's a possibility of some kind of a tanker war breaking out in the Straits of Hormuz, then oil prices are obviously going to spike. There'll be economic crisis throughout the Western world. Trump administration will be in some trouble because it'll have to decide what he's going to do, and it has no military options. I mean, invading Iran is an absurdity. So if that does happen, and if there is a tanker war in the Strait of Hormuz, then the Americans are in a lot of trouble. So the maximum pressure policy could really backfire, and the maximum pressure will be applied against the Trump administration far more previously than against Iran.
Okay, and Richard, I got one last question for you, and that is that Mr. Trump has said that we have no problem with the current leaders in Iran after, of course, he changed his mind regarding regime change. First, he asked for a regime change and said no problem with the current leaders, but we don't want a nuclear Iran. The JCPOA has taken care of this. There will be no nuclear Iran. Like I said, Islam doesn't allow it in the first place, and also the deal doesn't allow that. So this is not Mr. Trump's concern. If he's worried about the global security and Iran going nuclear, so why doesn't he go back to the nuclear deal that stops Iran from doing this and also ask Israel to come clear about this nuclear arsenal? We have only 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Israel, who knows Israel? They deny that they've got nuclear capacity. I think it's probably generally accepted by most that they probably do. But Israel has not threatened. You know, whatever you say, Beirut, I understand about the Islamic side of things. I respect that. But the Iranian regime, the government, they have threatened to wipe Israel. They have said Israel is a cancer that needs to be removed. And there are threats against Israel constantly, whether maybe not with the nuclear side of it as it stands, and I hear what you say, but certainly there is funding to terrorist groups. And as I said previously, it isn't just about the nuclear side, it's about the funding against groups attacking Israel, funding against groups attacking Saudi Arabia. Somehow America just
Richard,
wants to cut that down.
Richard, we're being out of time. Let's give George also 30 seconds.
Well, that's exactly. I mean, you know, Iran has complied with the agreement. The issue of how it spends its money is entirely up to Iran. Their money is theirs, $150 billion. It's not America's money, it's Iranian money. And it's up to the Iranians how they want to spend the $150 billion. To the extent that they spent it fighting terrorism, that was an entirely to the benefit of the world, and the world should be very grateful to what Iran has done. As far as Hezbollah, you know, if Israel has problems with Hezbollah, then there's a very simple solution. Don't invade Lebanon. Don't bomb Lebanon.
Exactly.
Don't antagonize the
Shiites. George, we're out of time.
You won't have problems with Hezbollah.
Sorry, I have to jump in. We're out of time. Let me thank our guests. We had Richard Millett, journalist and political commentator from London, and George Samuelis, senior research fellow with Global Policy Institute, who joined us from Budapest. Thank you for watching this program. We'll see you next time.